The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Geeks Under the Influence podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of RVA Magazine, Loot Crate, Amazon.com, or their employees. Listener discretion is advised. Fuck off if you don't like it.
Mike the Hobbit here, ready to bring you another action-packed episode of Geeks Under the Influence, but before we continue with that, let's talk about our sponsors, the ones that make this possible, so we can continue on with this amazing podcast. First up, of course, is Amazon.com. They've been with us for a while. You can find a link to Amazon.com through our homepage at GUIpodcast.com. Click on the Amazon affiliate link, and anything you purchase through that link, we get a little bit of a profit. So it's a way to buy all the amazing stuff that you can find on Amazon and help out your favorite podcast at the same time. I cannot begin to tell you how happy we are to have this next sponsor for GUI. We're talking Loot Crate, a monthly subscription box that brings you all the best in nerd. Last month in October was horror. We're talking a Leatherface plushie. We're talking a Walking Dead t-shirt. Hell, Nightmare on Elm Street chopsticks. It is just a gift to yourself every month. It's a monthly subscription. Go to the link on the show notes for this episode and use the code MAGICAL to save yourself $4 on your first box. And it is absolutely worth it. And it's a way to support this podcast. And that's about it. Join the conversation. Hit us up on Twitter at GUIPodcastRVA or Facebook. Just look up Geeks Under the Influence. Instagram, Geeks Under the Influence, all one word. Or just go to GUIPodcast.com. It's got all our links there. Now on to the episode.
Frank's Red Hot all the way.
Damn right. I'll put that shit on everything.
Yeah.
Actually, come to think of it.
No.
Can we get sponsored by Frank's Red Hot, please?
Hell yes.
GUI needs his own hot sauce.
Oh, dude.
Anybody that makes their own hot sauce that wants to do a GUI hot sauce, I think we're completely...
And we're not talking about some like David and Sandy shit, but like a good, well-balanced, flavorful, but hot sauce.
And not just Chipotle. Yeah. Just don't throw some fucking Chipotle peppers in a blender and call it a sauce.
I want some cayenne, man. You know, I want
something a little bit different. Give us our own flavor. You know?
Still gonna have the same peppers that is in everything. There's different things you could add to it to make it its own.
Can't you put like bourbon in it or something?
Ooh.
You could.
Yeah. Jack,
well, doesn't like Jim Beam or Jim Jones have their own like hot sauce?
I think a couple
of those major liquor companies do.
Yeah, they got their own hot sauces. They're not very good.
Well, what would be a good hot sauce for a John Carpenter movie? Like, let's do like we were trying to tell people to create
Ghost Pepper of Mars. All right, I quit. I quit.
Big Trouble in Little Cayenne.
You got me on that one. You got me on that one.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, I don't know.
We're so fucking stupid. Those pepper and waters.
In the mouth of capsaicin.
Honestly, though, In the Mouth of Madness would be a perfect title for a hot sauce.
Yeah, absolutely. That is true.
It works on its own.
I believe Hobbit knows a lot about capsaicin.
Oh, yes, I do.
From one particular experience.
Yeah. What happened?
It was filmed. It's hilarious.
It's filmed.
Oh, wait. Oh, yeah.
Do I know this?
There is a local restaurant that's now been renamed, but they still have the challenge available that was on Man vs. Food called Caliente. They have the Stupid Wing Challenge.
Their name changed?
Yeah, it's now Shepherd Street. They still have the Stupid Wing Challenge. And I did it one day with one of my coworkers as part of like a challenge thing that we did. I won't get into the details, but basically, he got a wing and a half in. I got two wings in.
Oh.
Started sweating and shaking. My vision blurred. My face turned red. And I started making like weird noises.
like you're having sex.
Yeah. I then had to go to work after that.
Dumbest idea ever.
Yeah. You spend like the rest of the day in the bathroom?
Well, the rest of the day there was about 45 minutes of me in the bathroom and him out back puking. There was about 20 minute intervals between the puking or, you know, horrible stuff happening. So it was just enough time for me to walk out, go home, and get home just in time to start heaving in my toilet. So
good to know.
Yeah.
Gross.
It's a good time. It's a good time. Yeah. But we're not talking about my digestive tract. What we are talking about is...
Bad decisions.
No, we're talking about good decisions, which is watching all the beauty that is John Carpenter on this episode.
Truth.
Which there needs to be in the Mouth of Madness hot sauce. That just needs to happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we're talking all things John Carpenter. He is just a legend of horror and sci-fi. and just an incredible filmmaker and musician in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get into that on this episode and just our love. Kind of the best way to end our series of horror-centric, spook-centric episodes of Geeks Under the Influence. This is the one that's going to be releasing right around Halloween. So it makes sense to be doing the director that, you know, did Halloween.
Yeah. So.
Was that a movie?
It was, I don't know why you're here.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
where's that GUI?
I just heard that there would be beer here, and so I just came.
Yeah, fair enough.
Fucking.
Yeah, so we're talking about John Carpenter's history as a filmmaker, his movies, his soundtracks, his songwriting abilities on this episode of Geeks Under the Influence, and welcome.
Geeks Under the Influence.
I'm even texted earlier today, I'm unreasonably excited about this episode.
And who shouldn't be?
It's John fucking Carpenter.
Damn right.
As Anthony put, or Groots put, before we started, is that this is a non-research episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, a no-brainer.
It's a no-brainer.
This is a day-to-day episode for us.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the fact...
It's a thing.
The fact is, we've got six panelists, and...
I'm beating you, Hobbit.
Oh.
I know. Hey, I have the second kid on the way, and I'm pulling out way better dad jokes than you could even try to do.
Look, man, I'm in the middle of doing the intro. I haven't gotten to the dad joke part
yet. See, it needs to be like, bam, come on, man. You know, come on. Tighten up.
Slacking.
Tighten up.
I used my dad joke for the thing that I put online saying that we're here to podcast and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
Yeah, man, that was pretty good.
That was pretty good. Okay.
All right, so finish the intro then.
All right. Yeah, thank you. So John Carpenter has basically been a legend for anybody that is into sci-fi and horror movies. He's done some of the best that we've ever seen in sci-fi and horror. And so it's really hard to really whittle this down into one episode, but we're going to try to do it. I have a good feeling that we're going to be doing episodes on individual movies of Carpenter in the near future. Because really, each and every one of his films, even the not-so-great ones, still probably deserve their own episodes and have plenty to talk about. So we're just going to do a light glancing on just the career of John Carpenter and the movies that he's done on this episode. I am Mike the Hobbit Bickett, host of Geeks Under the Influence. You can find me at Mike Bickett on Twitter. You can follow us, the Geeks Under the Influence Twitter, at GUI Podcast RVA. Also, follow all our social media by going to GUIPodcast.com. It has all our links. And also, you know, join the conversation. Rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Rate us, comment, let us know what you want to hear. And those ratings actually help us go up in the rankings. So definitely do that. Help out your favorite podcast.
Five favorite movies, bro.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, we're going to do, as we go around, we're going to do our five favorite Carpenter movies in order. It's not like a
that was such
stress
a smooth
test
segue right there. Holy shit.
Fucked up. That was on him.
Look, there's nothing about this podcast that's smooth segue, so.
You know, can I amend? Like, the five favorite is a great idea, but we're all going to have basically the same things to say.
I don't think so.
No, we're just saying the five. Saying the five favorite. No explanation.
No discussion. Just say the five.
We're discussing during the episode, in the middle of the episode.
So I got to go. Number one's got to be The Thing for me. Second is Escape from New York. Third is Halloween. Fourth is They Live. And fifth is...
You have to look.
Fucking anchor.
In the Mouth of Madness.
Move on. Next one.
In the Mouth of Madness.
All right.
Yeah. Okay. Next to me on my left is Mr. Lowdown Brown MacGyver, the sexual chocolate.
Sup, guys. Excuse Hobbit. He's fucking retarded.
That does happen.
Yeah. Top five Carpenter films. Number one, for me, is fucking Halloween. Two, we're going to go with The Thing. Three, Escape from New York. Four, They Live. And five, In the Mouth of Madness.
Nice. And next to Mr. Lowdown is the German.
Yo.
Mr. Sports is dumb. Me.
Well, it is. So, what the fuck, you know? You know, I might be an asshole for saying this, but Derby's fun to watch.
Derby is fun to watch.
Yeah, an asshole. My wife plays Derby, so it's all good.
It's amazing.
It's all good.
And Lady Soccer is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Lady Soccer, is that what you, like, call beating your wife? Or, like, what is...
No, that's Derby.
Silly bastard.
All right, Groots, what's your top five?
Oh, the thing. Fucking Big Trouble in Little China. It's so much fun.
Fuck. Oh, neither
God,
of y'all
is. God damn it. For me, they know. Live, Halloween. I mean, you can't really put them in order.
Yes,
you know?
You can. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, sure. In the Mouth of Madness, man. They're fucking all good. All these early ones are good.
Yeah.
There you go. Off top of my head.
All right, next to Anthony, the portly white Queequeg, Mr. Scotty P is here.
Half lung.
Mr. Half lung.
Actually, I got a clean bill of health on that. Thank you from the doctor the other week.
Which
you're
is
still half one.
And he's also portly white Queequeg, so.
No. Bring it on, bitches.
Wasn't he Tusk at one point?
Yeah, no, you were in Tusk.
Oh, I definitely, I don't know what you would call a whale sound, or whatever it is called.
The walrus?
Walrus, thank you.
There you go. Good job.
I've been hanging out with Hobbit too long. I don't know what to say.
God damn it.
Yeah.
So, it's me, guys. Jersey Devils. All right.
We are the Devils.
The Devils. The Devil. The Devil. God damn. I mean, I agree with Groots, but if you got to go top five with John Carpenter, it's definitely Halloween, Big Trouble in Little China, The Thing, In the Mouth of Madness, and let's pull out... The Fall.
Yes.
Ooh.
Yes.
So wait. So you're saying that you like The Fog more than They Live?
Or is
no,
Escape from New York?
Not.
So why would that be your top five if you don't like it?
Because
Scotty P, you're ruining this for everyone watching and everyone listening.
I have a good answer for this, because top fives are bullshit.
No, they're not.
Say that to John Cusack.
They'll because he ripped off a book for a movie doesn't mean shit, all right?
Hey, you know top five on a Thursday. Oh, it's a fucking Friday.
Yeah, it is.
Different
today. My top five has been pretty much a staple since I've seen those movies. Yeah. So,
And let me say that also the reason why I pull out that top five is because those were the original five John Carpenters that I watched. Not that I like them or love anything less of his other movies. Those were the ones I originally grew up and first watched.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why those are my top five.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough. You're still wrong. Next up is next to Scotty P.
Well,
is,
then I've been definitely hanging out with you way too long if I'm wrong on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, true. Right. Next to Scotty P is Fuck You Hunter.
So I guess this would kind of go with my namesake, but I don't know if anybody else in the panels actually met Carpenter, but I actually had to make the decision of what to get him to sign. So I can definitely say
dude,
my top
my
movie.
Penis, I'm a penis.
That's right. But I have to say, trying to go through which one to get him signed, I had him sign The Thing. So my number one is The Thing. I go Halloween.
My boy.
That's right.
Yeah.
I go Halloween, Escape from New York, They Live, and then...
You gotta look at the list too,
Big Trouble in Little China. I had to remember that fifth one, man. God damn it.
Damn it, man.
So, but yeah, I go
I'm gonna chalk that one up to age for you.
Well, hell yeah. Right, where am I? What's going on?
You're getting a little long in the tooth, as they say.
But yeah, definitely Thing's number one for me.
Yeah. Because damn. And we'll get into that, of course, shortly. Finally, our last panelist. We got a six-pack tonight. Six-pack of panelists. Six of us. Doing the John Carpenter thing.
Six pack.
I always sing Black Flag, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Is finally Miss Katie is here.
She had a drink there.
I'm ready.
Yeah,
ready
now
for
that
me?
Now that you
you guys ready for me? Because you're probably gonna be mad.
Now that you took that wine down, yes, go ahead.
Okay, The Thing, because duh. There's The Thing, there's Big Trouble, there's can I use a movie that is not necessarily directed but produced and composed?
Well,
let her do what she wants, man.
This is not a hard line. This is not coming out in a fucking article. So
okay. Halloween 3 is number 3 for me. For
he did
sure.
produce. He did produce on 3.
I fucking love that movie.
Oh,
so
I had
some
looking
oh
on
god.
And then Halloween 1 and 2.
Okay.
Oh, thrown in the sequel.
Ooh, all right.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
I mean, it's the same fucking movie.
So she was right. We died. Like, everyone kind of had, different orders. Similar movies, but different orders. You know.
Absolutely.
So, like, one or two.
Yeah. And I will say, the shit I got, I don't know about how, but for me, the Big Trouble in Little China, that was like, if I had a number, the top six slot, it would have been number 6.
Yeah.
Really?
Trying to throw it
in. Yeah, because all those five, those five for me are just, Big Trouble in Little China is fun, and just, it's got a good
Kurt
mix
Russell.
Of,
mm.
Yeah,
he's Snake. He's better a Snake than he is.
I'm sorry. It doesn't matter what character. To my wife, he is the beefcake.
Thank you. Yes. Kurt Russell
is Beefcake.
Captain fucking Ron is the Beefcake.
He is the Beefcake.
Dude, Stuntman Mike is the fucking Beefcake.
Not when he's crying like a little bitch at the end of that movie.
That was the best part.
Yeah,
dude,
that was great.
Soldier, all right, is Beefcake.
That movie I like more than I should because it's not exactly the best movie, but I still really like it.
But you know what? He's Beefcake.
Dude, that was the easiest role ever for an actor because he had like 8 lines.
Exactly.
It was just like, no.
All right. I shoot a gun. This is relevant to a lot of your number one. Our lovely panelist, Smash, who is not on this episode, miss you, bro, said that somebody in this camp ain't what he appears to be. Right now, that may be one or two of us. By spring, it could be all of us.
Right.
Boom.
Nice.
It's well done. Well done. Well done.
Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
Let's get into the thing first because I'm biased and
And you're a dick.
And I'm a dick.
Right?
But the thing I think for me, what I really liked is the fact that I was a big fan of sci-fi and horror, and for me, it was right up there with Alien as being the movie that was able to balance on both genres equally and still come out just both terrifying and like scientifically relevant at the same time.
You know, I can, and that's why I was my number two, because I am a big fan of sci-fi as well as horror. Mm-hmm. But my love for horror kind of and the stalker and psychosis of Halloween kind of trumped that.
Sure.
But you did bring up Alien, and honestly, if someone do or die situation pick between Alien and The Thing as far as my favorite sci-fi horror, I'm going to go with The Thing on that.
Yep, totally. Yep.
Yeah. Well. Because, all right, look, compare Alien and The Thing. You both have characters that are doing the normal thing, and they have to go way out of character to figure out what the fuck is going on. I mean, it's a great crossover.
The difference I see is that in Alien, it's this alien that is stalking them and killing them. And they are sort of unified in trying to do it. The Thing, they all become suspicious of each other and start
paranoia.
They're pitted against each other, and that's what makes it fucking awesome.
Well, and here's the real reason why there's a lot of parallel between The Thing and Alien is that there is some shared blood between the movies.
Really?
Dark Star, which was John Carpenter's first directorial, you know, his first film, was written by Dan O'Bannon, mm-hmm. who then went to write Alien.
Right.
Whoa. Yeah, so
that's that
mind blown.
That's a GUI fact.
That took me a second. Holy shit. Okay.
GUI fact. Boom boom boom. We need some of that like Mike in the Morning like sound effects thrown
in
there.
Back to the day.
Back to the day.
And just to go ahead and inject here, throw in that, I mean, the 1970s were prime for the sci-fi horror combination. Because even though it was still all practical effects, which are, in I think most of our opinions, better than most of the CGI shit, but they finally had a way to, when they had an idea, to write it and actually make it to fruition to show what they meant. I mean, the 40s and the 50s black and whites were great, but think about the effects that happened in the 70s, man.
Yeah.
I mean, breakthrough shit.
Oh, absolutely.
I agree wholeheartedly with you. But when I said if I had to put side by side, I'd pick The Thing. I say that also knowing that The Thing has to give Alien all the props because The Thing came out, what, 4 years after Alien?
Well, if you look at the timeline here, Dark Star came out first, which was definitely a reference point for both Dan O'Bannon and John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Dan O'Bannon went on to write Alien and did it with Ridley Scott, and John Carpenter kind of used his immersion into alien life and the whole trapped in the room concept, you know, the claustrophobic feel, to do The Thing. So both of those movies come from Dark Star. That's really the kind of the beginning point for both of those films. So I would say that Alien came out first, but they came from the same place.
Yeah, it's kind of a reach. I want to say that it came from Dark Star, but that's where connections were made. But I will say this, I would say Alien would be better compared to Halloween because it really is one monster slashing and killing motherfuckers.
Okay. Truth.
That's a good point.
No, the stalker aspect, the suspense.
The suspense. Absolutely. Like, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
And then the stalker not even having to do a whole much. But even what brought up a good idea, what you said about like the claustrophobia part of it and bringing in everything. And I always forget it because the remake was shitty as fuck. And I love Ethan Hawke, but Assault on Precinct 13.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, brother. Dude, yes.
Bring, talk about the claustrophobia where you know you have so much room or else you're getting a fucking bullet in your head. And that movie is fucking phenomenal, especially in the 70s when, dude, who takes on the police, especially back then when it was all...
The Warriors take on the police, and they take on any other gang in New York City.
That's West Side Story, bro.
I'm sorry. I should have had beer bottles on the tips of my fingers.
You're snapping your fingers like...
Is there nothing on this table? I feel like
I think we have a couple empty ones here.
Right. But Assault on Precinct 13...
That's better.
Yeah.
Assault on Precinct 13 really was... Even at that point, like... What was a new take on a lot of stuff. It wasn't a monster from beyond. It wasn't sci-fi. It was real fucking life.
Exactly.
It was real.
And that's where Carpenter really breaks through on shit, is that he really touches, like, personal shit.
Absolutely.
For me, the thing that really hit me with the movie was just how the transformations happened, like the practical effects, but just how fucking crazy. And, you know, we were throwing around different type of gifts today and stuff like that, and one of my favorite is dude goes to put the paddles down and his stomach opens up and fucking takes his arm.
Yep.
And right there I was like, this movie is fucking amazing.
And if you go back in the GUI catalog, our first on location with Monster at the Monster Mania Con last year, the thing was supposed to have a reunion. Like, two of the guys backed out, one of them being, what's his name?
Keith David. Yeah.
He backed, and I forget what the...
Wolfer Brimley?
Keith David. He was the one at the end that was drinking the scotch.
He's the one that...
From They Live.
The black guy.
Yeah, he was in They Live as well. Okay. Yeah.
Just say the black guy. Come on, man.
There's two black guys. There's two black guys. Both black dudes bailed.
Get the fuck
out.
You
said it, not us.
Yeah, I know.
He's allowed to.
But he still had a panel. And I think the guy who played, who was the dude with the red hair who they killed in the snow, who the hand was just growing, who got wrapped up.
Oh, shit.
He got wrapped up by the one
with the hands?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah, fuck. That actor. He was telling the story and how they basically hired a like amputee for that as the extra for that scene. No so shit. When the arms ripped off, like the dude has no arms. It's not the actor.
That's awesome.
And we found that out from the panel at that con. That was pretty sweet knowledge because you think it might just be practical effects where they just do with full arms and they just shoot it where it rips off.
An extra few inches of prosthetics or something.
It's really just a dude with no arms
awesome.
Doing
that's
that scene.
That's awesome.
That's pretty fucking sick.
That's awesome.
I have a special announcement to make that I just realized is that my mom is watching right now.
Hi!
Hello!
Mike's the mom!
That's a thing that's happening right now. Now, that's my fault. I told her that other parents watched, so...
We're not going to lighten up for you, sorry.
No, she's good. She's fine. Yeah, she's got a good sense of humor.
She's cool.
The thing about... The thing about personally editing John Carpenter movies to fit for kids, because that's the only way that I'm going to watch them. Because I don't watch filth, personally.
You should hang yourself.
No, all this decoration is just for the podcast. I know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, normally,
it's not your personal stuff.
I watch nothing.
And you see, you'll notice I said stuff instead of shit.
Yes. All
right.
Yeah.
Don't shit on my shit. All right.
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to call you out on your shit.
Fuck, guys. Right. Did you let Hobbit talk?
God damn.
Damn y'all.
You're a fucking asshole.
What just happened? Yeah. I missed it. Sorry.
So I looked at the comments, and apparently my mom did write a fan letter to Kurt Russell back in the day.
What?
That's awesome.
Yes.
That's awesome. Yeah. Fan letter.
Yeah, that is
wonderful. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
That is beautiful.
I should have told you that was your mom, but I was just like, oh, hey, Lori Biggott. Oh, that's awesome. And then I went back to the episode. I didn't even think to tell you your mom.
All right, but we've talked a bit about the thing, but really, I think, do you have a...
Yeah, yeah. It just occurred to me. You're probably conceived when she was thinking about Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
What a disappointment.
Yeah. You took the words right out of my fucking mouth. God damn you.
Can we call him Little Kurt now?
I'm going to call you Captain Ron from now on, bro.
I'm Big Trouble in Mother Hobbit.
you're Mini Beefcake now, is what it is.
No, yes. Let's be fair. I'm the thing.
I mean, you were in an Escape from the Bad Canal?
Yeah.
Oh! And now she's done.
Hey. She's just left. Hey.
All right, so Halloween.
Are we done with the thing? Is the thing over?
Well, we can hit back on it.
We'll get back there, don't worry.
We glanced on it. I think we really need to hit on Halloween. Halloween was the thing that really made John Carpenter a fucking name. Not only that, I wouldn't say that it's necessarily the first slasher that ever happened, but it's really the slasher that made the genre of slashers. It created the genre. So
yeah, I was going to say, without Halloween, I mean, it was so profitable. Every studio was like, all right, we're in, and that's where you get Friday the 13th and everything else. It's because of Halloween.
I was about to say, Friday the 13th rode the coattails. Like, they were almost neck and neck. But if John Carpenter didn't do Halloween the way he did, it could have thrown it off. So
true.
I was saying it was 2 years. Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine.
I mean, yeah, they were almost neck and neck, but it was still 2 years difference, which in cinema is a big deal.
But think about 2 years release, but the time that it still took to make movies even back then, dude, and the people that probably had to know each other,
started
a good idea
6-8 months after the other one started.
Exactly. It was probably in the can for a good year before it was released. Well,
the fact that Carpenter made it so inexpensive when he made it, that's what made the studios foam in the mouth. They went, holy shit, this guy just barely had a budget and made this phenomenal movie did so fucking well.
It's the Kevin Smith mentality. Mm-hmm. Of you use the least amount of budget that you can, make a great film, and as long as the studios are seeing that recoup on the cash and everything, you've got a fucking movie.
Yeah, no shit.
Where do you think Kevin Smith got that mentality from?
Damn right.
Like, I'm just saying, like, it's from directors like Carpenter.
Exactly.
And yeah, we touched on Halloween, like, not only what it did for horror, but just the way it did it, because you're right, it started the genre, but the way they did the suspense in that, and like, it's not very bloody, but it's still one of the scariest fucking movies you'll ever watch.
And just in the midst of, for Halloween, shall we also give thanks to William Shatner for reversing his face?
Oh yeah, way to go
for the mask.
They tried like a clown mask. I remember watching.
Glad they didn't go that route.
They tried. Like, they would have Nick Castle, who played Mike Myers in the original Halloween, go in and out and try on different masks and come out and like, no. And then they came out with this whited out fucking
Shatner mask.
And then it came down to William Shatner taking his face off, reversing it, bleaching it, and putting it on Nick Castle. And that's really why we have Mike Myers.
That's totally legit.
That one comment I went to, somebody had the original mask before they, made it Michael Myers. And that mask was creepy as fuck looking.
Yeah, it
was start.
So could you imagine being in the 70s and like, dude just walks out of the bathroom wearing like a jumpsuit and that? You're like, yeah, that's it. That's it. Okay. We're done.
Well, what a lot of people don't seem to realize is that Halloween, the way that we know it now with the masks and the Halloween stores and everything, really wasn't the way it was until probably the 50s or 60s is when it really started. So you look at the masks from the 60s and 70s, they're like the action figures from the 60s and 70s. They're poor portrayals.
Even a full mask per se. It was just, you just had the front like this plastic piece of shit.
It was shit. Like,
yeah, it was horrible.
I mean, you can go to all the like vintage stores, antique stores and everything, find old costumes where it was this like piece of plastic with things printed on it for the costume part and the shitty little mask that goes for the face with a little tiny string.
You even get decent fabric for like a shirt.
Yeah.
Much like, I mean, even some of the actual outfits were plastic
It was plastic as shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Super plastic, yeah.
I mean, your parents had to spend that extra, like, $5 if you were getting the, like, cotton shit. So, you know?
Honestly, that's why I think Halloween hit it off so well in the 70s because here was something that was vaguely familiar to people that appreciated Halloween, but it was put in such a darker text that it really created something that was both like recognizable and terrifying at the same time.
Absolutely. But the simplicity. Besides like something like In the Mouth of Madness, John Carpenter uses that like just simplistic of, there's a very vague dude in the background. Is he good? Bad? Oh, he just fucking killed you. Fuck you.
You get that.
And that's what you get.
You get that with a lot of his stuff.
I was going to say, I think what also helps with that movie is fucking motherfucking Donald Pleasance, who just sets up so much, like, he's pure evil. Like, he's, like, pretty much, he tells you everything you need to do about Michael Myers. Like, he's just fucked up. He's known his entire life, and he's like, this dude needs to be fucking killed. He's just evil.
Well, I think what Scotty P. brought up, the simplicity thing, that really kind of embodies why John Carpenter movies work so well, because the plot isn't overly complicated. You look at something as mentally fucking as The Thing, the plot is still really simple. You look at the music that accompanies it, it's perfect for the movies because it's really simple.
He does.
Yeah, and he does all, I don't think all, but
Ennio
most of
Morricone did The Thing.
Was it Ennio Morricone?
It wasn't John Carpenter who did the music in
that. But, I mean, if you're going to trade off to somebody, that's a pretty good, like...
Yeah, right?
Yeah. But the music meets that kind of simplicity where there's a real... The complication happens in your head. It's not in the film. It makes you make it complicated in your head. Everything there is laid out and it's very simple. And it's not... You don't figure it out at the very beginning, but it's just super simple. But it fucks your brain. That's why it's so perfect.
Your mother would not appreciate that language.
Sorry, Mom.
She did. Her response to our Kurt Russell thing with you was, I was 10. So.
Wait, whoa. So, Mom, you were fucking at 10?
Mike!
No, I'm
upset too. Like, I didn't realize. This kind of upsets me a little bit. Like, I need a moment.
Now she's really gone.
Yeah, right. No, she didn't. So,
I do love
it. I want to come on the coattails of Fuck You, Hunter. Donald Pleasance set up, and that was a suspense in the first part of the movie. He set up the fear, and then he's pure evil, like, you know, and everything about, like, no, you don't understand. You need to, like, find him and stop him. But what sealed the deal was the last 25 minutes of the movie. Fucking Jamie Lee Curtis, man.
Dude,
come on.
Yeah.
She crushed that shit. Mm-hmm. Pleasant set it up. Nick Castle and Curtis killed that shit at the end.
Oh, yeah.
That was the two of them doing that. And that the ending is what you're waiting for the entire movie. It's literally like having sex. It was like this awesome build up and then it's just like fucking going and then bam, the end of the movie. And he just gets up and walks away.
Do you know what makes that work though? He's able to have believable characters.
True.
And whether it's Assault on Precinct 13 or The Thing or Halloween, the characters are in the movie seem natural. And that's good directing, that's good writing. And so you actually feel the terror. You feel the terror for Jamie Lee Curtis, you know.
Well,
awesome. You know, and like that's the biggest thing. Like when you have a believable character, it makes it so much scarier because you identify with them.
Exactly.
But see, that also flows into Christine, that he helped with as well. Ooh. You have believable characters, but an unbelievable villain. Who believes that a fucking car is killing shit?
Well, I mean, you're talking
Apparently
about
Apparently you've never owned a classic car.
Well, I mean...
Kills your wallet.
Yeah, that's...
Well, not just your wallet. My classic car tried to kill me. I'm just saying.
There's always something unbelievable, but... It's the surrounding characters and the surrounding, you know, it's the regular situation that they're put in against this thing. That's what you identify with.
Well, yeah, because and most directors, writers have an MO that they use for that. And Carpenter does it great because he's been doing it for 30 plus years, 40 plus years, whatever it may be, where he can take the average person, high school student, regular dude just trying to get by in life, and puts them in those weird situations. And even something as simple as like Mike Myers. But what the fuck are you going to do against that when you have no previous knowledge, no training, nothing? You just don't know. And the mind fuck that he gives you on all that shit is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, I agree with what you're saying about Christine. Yeah, who the fuck believes that a car is going to come after your ass and try to kill you? Right. But that's the one example. But Halloween is perfectly plausible. Some nut job breaks out of a fucking... Because at that point, before the bullshit sequels came out, you just knew it was some nut job who was... Her brother broke out of an insane asylum and then tries to kill her.
Well, and don't even find out that it's her brother until, like, at the very end.
That was two.
That's why you don't even find out until two.
As far as you know, it's just some dude breaks out of a nut house and tries to kill her.
And to be fair, that's it. He didn't write Christine. That was Stephen King.
Well, the book. He wrote the screenplay.
Can we bring up real quick the way the movie opens with the shot of him putting the mask on and going in. And you get the first person. And you get that perspective. Yeah, the first person perspective of him pretty much walking there and just stabbing. You're like, that's perfect fucking way to start a movie.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Right there.
Just you kill your sister.
Yeah, you just see it. You just see the mask on, stab her, well, and you're it's not the fuck?
It's not even that. It's also when the parents show up and they pull the mask off of him, and it's just this little, like, 7-year-old kid just standing there, like, with a bloody knife going, what?
He was six.
What? Or six. Fuck.
Well, and that's why I gotta say, and we'll get into the sequels and the remakes and everything on the second half, probably, but that exact moment is why the original Halloween works for me and the remake does not, because it explained in the remake why he was crazy, and it was the cookie cutter of a serial killer. It was bullshit. There was like, there was incest and child molestation, and like he was murdering animals and all this stuff that you expect with a serial killer. It was way creepier for it to be a little kid in a fucking clown mask that murdered people, and there's
whether or not
no explanation.
He had that history, it was there.
Yeah.
It just happened. You don't know if he had that history.
You had no fucking idea. All it was is that he just fucking snapped and started killing people.
Right.
And that makes it way creepier.
It's scarier because you don't need that exposition.
No, you don't.
You don't.
That's what I was going to say. The Rob Zombie one is just so much explaining, and we don't fucking care. I'll be honest. At least I didn't. I was just like, get to the part where he's Michael Myers, not
we don't
kid.
Need the origin story.
Yeah, I made a mask, and it's like Danny Trejo's in there. That's awesome, but that's about it. Like,
honestly, no, they had Ken Furey as well as a trucker, so that was nice. Yeah.
But to me, it's like a lot of reboots and a lot of remakes. It's like, it's Hollywood. You rip off somebody. You're doing this or that. Just come up with a different title, change a few more things, and you have a different movie. Technically. Don't
oh, kind of like Armageddon Deep Impact type of situation?
Basically. Yeah. Where you have, but that's almost the way
it
is.
One had an Aerosmith song, one didn't.
Oh, shit.
Aerosmith soundtrack.
One had a Hobbit, one didn't. So, just saying.
One had Bruce Willis, one didn't.
One had a black president, one didn't. Oh. Just saying.
Morgan Freeman with eyebrows.
Morgan Freeman.
One has Steve Buscemi, one didn't.
Oh, no, all right.
That's
the
true.
Boosh.
All right.
True.
All right.
All right, so
I think we really need to talk about one of my it's such a good fucking movie, and it was even like covered, one of its best moments of all time was covered in South Park.
Yes.
We're talking about Put on the Fucking Glasses, They Live.
Yes.
Is an absolutely stunning movie. And not even in the schlock level. I mean, it's a plain just across the board good fucking movie.
Before we get into that, does anybody know, or can anybody answer for me, was Roddy Piper in anything besides this movie?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, in
movies? Hell Comes to Frogtown.
I was just about to say.
Are you talking Carpenter or just in general?
In general.
Oh, no. He was in a bunch of stuff besides just this. A lot of low budget. This was probably his height.
Okay.
Of
and that's what I thought I'd seen him in stuff before, but...
Oh, I can have you leave with Hell Comes to Frogtown tonight. Trust me. It's a fantastic flick where there's weird paper mache frog heads with like a lip. You can almost see the string pulling the bottom lip down for them to talk. It's wonderful.
They actually made two sequels to that.
I've only seen the first one.
I gotta see the sequels.
Dude.
Roddy Piper, it's a post-apocalyptic wasteland where nuclear radiation has caused most men to be infertile, and his fertility scale is off the fucking chain. So he gets a little, like remote-controlled, like metal diaper thing to prevent him from fucking without the approval of the people.
So a chastity belt.
A chastity belt deal.
Yeah, they can open it up and let his dick come out.
So he can fertilize the world. But then frog people take his handler, and he has to go rescue her, and a frog lady tries to fuck him. It's weird. It's fucking weird.
By the way, like walking into a room and Hobbit's talking about fertilizing the world.
You sound like a crazy person on the corner when you explain this movie. You're like, but it's frog people, and there's a...
How on point am I, though?
Exactly.
I'm super on point about how this movie is.
But if you
is,
were on the corner just saying to people, like, all right, he needs help. Like, he's talking about frog people.
You would expect me to be
insane.
Both shitting on myself and, like, punching myself in the balls at the same time.
Doesn't sound like a movie, like...
No. No, you remind me of Quentin Tarantino's character in Little Nicky.
Wow, good pull. I can't believe you actually saw that movie.
That was a pull.
That was probably the best part, was him being a crazy preacher.
I love that movie.
Yeah. No.
With Henry Winkler and the bees?
Yes.
That was the only good thing about that movie.
That was.
Yeah.
You just have shit against Jewish people, I think.
Well, is he Jewish?
I think so.
Yeah,
he's just a Fonz to me.
Is he Jewish? Are you kidding me? Henry Winkler is Jewish.
He's the Fonz.
No, he's just Jew. There's no ish. Like, yeah, he's full.
He is.
Like,
he is the Jew.
The Jew.
I don't care. I don't see Jew colors.
Okay, so they live.
I don't see colors.
One of the greatest things I think They Live brought out was, aside from this, obviously the sci-fi and the you know, everyday consumerism that they were exploiting on, was just the way society was. And to a point today, the way it is today, like, everyone's out of work, they're, you know, scared of losing their jobs. No, I'm just like, but everyone, you know, people are running on hard times and they're just trying to come together and then work when they can and try to form a community in being poor and being in poverty. That was a very good...
No, agreed, because even Hunter and I, when we were having on one of our pre-discussions about that, where for a long time, unless you were like one of us, like the nerdy people that love that movie anyways, there's been a resurgence in the past like 3 or 4 years. Look at the fucking politics and the shit that's been going on. It still fits to this day on the everything that they talk about in that fucking movie. And it's totally relevant.
So you're saying is that nothing has changed for poor people since the 80s? I say nay, sir. That's bullshit.
That's because we've all been poor since the 80s.
Yeah, that's true.
So you just don't know any better? No.
Well, the thing that movie taps into, of course, is, you know, it's a dystopian, you know, alien flick, but it definitely taps into that sort of social, you know, sort of consciousness of, you know, things are hard and things are tough and there's always something to get over on you. So it was incredibly relevant at the time and I really enjoyed it. But what was I gonna say? Oh, I did actually meet Rowdy Piper one time, and that was cool. Really awesome.
All right, so raise our glasses to the rally.
Yeah, let's do a cheers for Rowdy Piper.
Cheers, Rowdy.
Amen.
All out of bubblegum.
All out of bubblegum.
But I will say that Hunter and myself...
He's all out of a lot of things right now. Yeah.
Did meet Rowdy Piper at a Mad Monster Con about three years ago.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably a year before he passed away. So.
And he is one of the nicest people.
Yeah, he was so nice. When you go to these cons, some people are fucking assholes. They sign up, get the fuck out of there. Other people, like Rowdy Piper, who just... You talk, he doesn't care, you just have a conversation.
There for the fans.
Yeah, well,
and that's actually how he got the gig. The first time that John Carpenter met Rowdy Piper, he was actually a fan of wrestling from his childhood. And so he was at a wrestling match, and he was given the opportunity to meet Rowdy Piper, and he had talked to him about They Live, and he went in and talked to him and everything, and Rowdy was super nice to him. They got along really well. Rowdy didn't even really know who he was. He had heard about the movies that he had made, but he wasn't familiar with John Carpenter.
Yeah.
And this is post-Halloween. I mean, this is not like he wasn't an unknown. Like, he was John fucking... Yeah. At this point, he's still John fucking Carpenter.
Yeah.
And Roddy's like, oh, you know, nice to meet you, man. You know, like, what did you... Oh, you've done... Oh, yeah, no, I like that one. Like, had no idea that he was a person until they met. But was still perfectly nice, and they got along. And he put him in They Live because he was so easy to work with.
Well, he was an everyman, too.
Yeah, he was absolutely. The ultimate everyman. And that's what the character was supposed to be. So
you're saying we're this close to having the Junkyard Dog as his character, or like one of the WWE characters?
It's going
to
be Sergeant Slaughter.
Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah. Yes, bring back Sergeant Slaughter. I was actually going to segue into some of what you were saying was, like, if you look at the IMDb thing, I'm looking at the list just to make sure I'm saying it right. Everybody knew who John Carpenter was. Big Trouble in Little China was a big one. Starman.
Mm-hmm.
Starman.
Huge fan of Starman.
There was an Oscar nomination for that movie. I don't know if it was for script or for acting.
It doesn't matter. I think it might have been fucking Bridges.
Jeff Bridges, I think, got nominated for that role.
Yeah,
I think that was the Oscar nod there.
The same... throw you a fucking curveball as like Stephen King does with like Green Mile and Hearts in Atlantis, Starman.
Really? You're gonna say Green Mile and then say Hearts in Atlantis. You're not gonna Shawshank the situation. You missed Shawshank completely. Dude, and you're like, Hearts in Atlantis? Really? Hearts in Atlantis.
If you don't know Shawshank, you don't know shit.
If you know Hearts in Atlantis and you don't know Shawshank, then you need to go fucking kill yourself.
That's true, too.
If you reference Hearts in Atlantis before you reference Shawshank...
Ugh.
I'm sorry. All right, so...
Get out.
You're out.
Just get
fired.
You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
I agree.
because that was bullshit.
What I liked about Starman.
Anyway, Starman, excuse me, Groots, I love you.
Get it, get it.
But Hobbit needs to learn when to shut his fucking mouth.
No, that's never going to happen.
Well, I know, right?
Continue.
Starman, Jeff fucking Bridges, and was it Margot Kidder? Was the... No.
Hunter?
Hunter, come on, movie guy.
Fucking Raiders, Marianne.
Yeah. Oh. Not Margot Kidder, but...
Fuck.
Damn it.
Come on, guys. Come on.
Yeah.
Cheater.
Come on. Cheater. You're fucking cheating.
We all have the non-dumb phones.
Yeah, it's...
The chick from Raiders. Let's just say
that. Yeah, the chick from Raiders and then the unnamed movie.
But
we don't talk about that movie.
Let's just call her Ms. Ravenwood. How about that?
Done.
Yeah, all right.
But, again, I'll just say, like Stephen King, just in general, where you have all the shall we say, almost the godfather of slasher fix, John Carpenter, but brings in that curveball of Starman, of a random alien who takes on the form of some other guy, but this woman falls in love with him and finds him to his home planet. Basically the adult version of E.T., if you will.
Okay.
It pulls on the heartstrings.
It's a departure, which is why it works. And exactly. I legitimately forgot that he directed that.
Dude, I forget too. You don't think about it until you pull his shit up on IMDb.
I was looking at
double check stuff, and you're just like, holy shit.
I'm looking at the list, and I was like, fucking Starman?
This is proof that John Carpenter has feelings. I mean, he legitimately...
He's not a robot.
Yeah, he's not a robot. He's not just a slasher killer.
He has mostly negative feelings, but and thinks that man is doomed, but like he does, in fact, have feelings.
But he throws in that glimmer of hope, which is really fucking awesome.
Yeah.
All right, I know we segued into Starman, but I got to pull it back to They Live with... can we just... Like, you just acknowledge that fucking fight scene?
The fight scene.
The fucking fight scene.
Okay, see, I had David and fucking Roddy Piper, so that's why I didn't bring it up.
I'm not sure, and anybody watching that feels the need to correct, I might be wrong, but I think it is still, to this day, the longest fight scene
in
cinema history. Yeah. 5 minutes and 20 seconds long.
And has been recreated on South Park.
Yep.
Step by step.
Absolutely.
You know the story with that. Carpenter just kept filming. They kept going out. He just kept filming. He just didn't cut. He just kept doing it.
Towards the end, when they're out of breath, they're literally out of breath. Like,
that's why that scene works.
It's so amazing.
Because you feel the exhaustion in the scene where they're just like, they're done.
Yes.
They're done.
Well, that's like a real fight. Like movie fights, like people don't get tired, but a real fight, you get tired.
You throw a couple punches, you're like, fuck, dude, just go down.
You get hit a few times, you're like, no, oh, I want to go down.
That's why that scene, I think the second or third episode of the first season of Daredevil, where it's the hallway scene, that's why that worked, because he looked utterly fucking exhausted through most of that fight.
Because didn't they film the Daredevil scene as like one continuous single shot? But there were times where
he hidden cuts,
like, was against a wall, and he was just like, deep breath and just go into the next room or take on the next dude. I mean, it was legitimately real.
Mind you, the whole fight started because he's told him to put on sunglasses. They're beating the fuck out of him. And it's we're literally just put on the sunglasses. That's all that was going on. And they beat the shit out of each other for...
He's like, no way, man.
Yeah, I'm not putting fucking sunglasses on. I'm going to kick the shit out of you.
No, but that's that machismo thing where it's just awesome. Like, no, it's not even it was against wearing the sunglasses. It was like, well, you're going to tell me to put on the sunglasses, so fuck you. I'm not putting on the sunglasses. Yeah, it had nothing to do with that. It's
you're
like
not my mama.
Yeah.
You don't tell me what to do.
It's that you can't tell me what to do. Kick dirt. You know,
I like the kick dirt.
That's like me having a conversation with my wife.
Oh,
I got you. Right?
I'm gonna tell her. I'm telling her.
No,
she's probably watching right now, and she's like, "Okay, one of the weeks that he doesn't want to get laid, cool, just check it off."
Well, when you think about it, you know, it's like some like crazy dude he just met. So of course he's not gonna put on fucking sunglasses. What if he puts them on and then he kicks his ass or something?
No, they got along a little bit before that.
I wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean,
I know, but that, like, as soon as he said, "What do you think this shit happens when I wear sunglasses?" He was like, "No, you're insane. Here's your fucking paycheck."
What, are the sunglasses laced with acid?
You don't know that.
No, he was on that train before the sunglass thing, like, because he was always about like, no, I got this gig, like, don't fuck with me. I got to make the money.
leave me the fuck alone, weirdo.
Yeah. I got five kids to feed.
one of my favorite scenes in that movie too is when he first puts it on. He walks into the store, and he's like looks and he's like, you're all right, but you're ugly as shit, and pretty much has that realization, and that kind of starts everything into the bubblegum scene.
Oh, that's
scene.
Like he can see us. Yeah. That thing. By the way, Groot's
Dick
good.
Tracy watches.
Yeah.
He can see us.
By the way, Groot's good Total Recall reference.
Oh, yeah.
I got you on that.
Hey.
Yeah.
We're at the halfway point at this point, so we're going to take a brief break. So when we come back, we're going to get into what we're drinking and get deeper into all things John Carpenter.
Oh, there's so much more. Around.
Escape from New York.
So stick around.
Go get drunk with us, but offline.
Hey, all. This is William McCobb, president of the Creatures Grim Motorcycle Club. Just wanted to give you all a little bit of info about our Toys for Tots run, 4th annual this year. It's on November 19th. We're starting at the Toys R Us in the West End. You can either bring a $10 donation or come and get a toy to be part of the run, or if you just want to donate to the Toys for Tots drive, that'll work too. I'll be personally out there till about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The ride is going to start at 12 o'clock registration. Kickstand's up at 1, open to all bikes, classic cars. Got a few stops around town, Legend Brewing Company, Renegade Classics. So there's some great prizes from several other local companies and vendors. Also, at the end of it, we're going to meet at Wonderland for a show. So come on down, and if you want to join in and donate there as well, there's another good spot. We'll be there all evening after that. You like kids, don't you? Come support.
Hey guys, thank you for watching the GUI podcast. This is Nick from Instant Replay Live. I get plugged here a lot, and I'm being allowed to do it myself this time. I'm going to plug myself as much as I can. You can check out our Twitter at INST Replay Live. I'm going to plug myself again. I'm plugging myself in front of all these guys right here. You can find us on YouTube if you search for Instant Replay Live, or youtube.com/C/InstantReplayLive, or at InstantReplayLive.com. We do video games, we do tabletop role-playing games, and we do reviews and all kinds of other stuff. So check us out.
Toski from the YMM podcast. Big fans of the Geeks Under the Influence. Talk about all the same shit, so definitely check us out. YMMpodcast.com.
This is Mike the Hobbit, direct from Fallout on a trivia night, telling you to come here every first and third Monday for trivia between 8 and 10, 25-cent wings, drink specials, prizes, and tons of really inappropriate trivia. It's a lot of fun. Do you guys agree? So that's proof that definitely come out and enjoy trivia every first and third Monday at Fallout.
In addition to Fallout, Geeks Under the Influence takes over Wonderland on the corner of 18th and Main Street for Geeks Under the Influence trivia every second and fourth Tuesday. So come and check it out. Ridiculous trivia, goofy music, great food, cheap drinks on the corner of 18th and Main Street, 1727 East Main. Come and check us out 8 to 10 every second and fourth Tuesday.
We are back for the second half of Geeks Under the Influence, our John Carpenter episode, talking all things John Carpenter movie and soundtrack and everything else involving the man, the myth, the legend, John Carpenter. But before we get into that, we're going to get into what we are drinking. And first off is Mr. Lowdown Brown was nice enough to bring a local beer, East Coast local beer.
Yeah. For those of you, we did an episode on location with the brewers from this particular beer. It's a Blue Mountain Brewery's Spooky. It is an ale brewed with real pumpkin puree and cocoa nibs aged in bourbon barrels. And God damn it, it's fucking spicy. Good.
It's so holy good.
Shit. I'm right? Digging this.
I hate pumpkin beer, but this is awesome.
Right? Well, yeah.
It's not just pumpkin beer. That's the thing.
The aged in bourbon barrels really does a lot to it, too. You get that on the
you got
to
have that combination for what they've done for that oh my god, it fucking works.
And so
it's fucking beautiful.
The reason I bought it was because on the label it's spooky, but the two O's are the eyes of a ghost standing over pumpkins, and like Michael Myers wears a sheet and disguises himself as a ghost as her boyfriend, and then there's pumpkins. So there you go.
I was about to say it's very classic white sheet ghost, which is funny coming from you.
It's very Scooby Doo.
Sheets are scary.
Yes, I know you find white sheets very scary, Lowdown. But
and the fact it says spook on it.
Only he's allowed to say
that can only come from that man's lips, right there.
It's far more popular than a Blue Mountain's Burning Cross Lager.
Well, they only sell that in Alabama, so yeah, it's okay.
Jesus Christ.
He has nothing to do with this. Shut your
no
mouth.
No shit, right?
No, but I will agree, this is a incredibly well-balanced beer for something that's both barrel-aged, has pumpkin, and notes of like chocolate nib and all that stuff.
Yeah.
There's so much going on with this beer, but there's nothing that's overpowering anything else.
It's called balance, goddammit. Yeah. Fucking balance.
I could see myself drinking this for like a full night, like this being the only drink I have for a full night, which is good.
And you will get lit up because it's like 8.5.
Oh, of course it is. Oh,
we're
going
to get tore up. Right. From the floor up, yo.
This is the panels are staying way later than we record beer.
Very much so, yes. Honey, I'm sorry.
And I bought two to make sure I had one to put on my rack.
Oh, later. Fair enough, yeah. Fair enough.
Nice.
Done. Yeah.
So Lowdown's doing that. I got to share once we're done, and we can do that in the midst of the episode if we need to, if we're not done sipping on Spooky.
What is it?
Oh, the one that I brought is the Cigar City Brewing Company Invasion Pale Ale in honor of They Live. Because, you know, nothing says proper invasion like hops invading your palate. So,
I mean, raping your palate.
This is actually not that bad. It's definitely on the hoppier side, but it's not as bad as, I'd say, like some of those super hop heavy IPAs. So, it's doable. As somebody that's not a big pale ale or IPA person, it's decent. I like it.
And I trust that because we are on pretty much the same level with
It's close to the edge for me, but I can do it.
You're
no not. Problem.
You're drinking a fucking IPA, dude.
Yeah, and it's not that hoppy either.
But it's still hop.
No.
Yeah.
Not as hoppy as you like.
I don't like it.
So. Exactly.
You like hops like Tigga.
I think you went a little racist on that one, sir.
No, Tigger it's with it. A T.
No, I know you okay. Said Tigger with a P. It's all about your tone, sir. Okay. Your tone.
Okay, all right.
Wow, we just went into the nether regions of shit right there. Holy fuck.
All right, next up on what we're drinking is Mr. Groot's.
Miss Bickett, can you please have a word with your son?
No, she's watching CNN. She's watching stuff. She's watching way worse racism right now. Groots.
I am drinking MacReady's favorite.
Show it to the camera.
Yes.
J&B blended scotch.
Whoop whoop.
It's fucking fantastic.
To MacReady.
That's right.
To MacReady.
MacReady.
May he rest in Frozen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cheers.
And not the movie. Not the movie, Frozen.
No, they're going to do a straight-up Captain America-style thing in 20 years where they, like, find him in ice and they pull him out. And then, like, and then there's the other dude that is the thing. And then they're going to do a total...
Childs.
I love Childs.
Do a total, like, big expansion on the thing where they got to fight the thing and it's Childs.
And it's going to be a horrible, shitty sequel.
Yeah, pretty much.
Probably. Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Fuckers.
But, yeah, that was the drink of MacReady.
Yeah,
in good the call. Thing.
That's why I bought it.
Yeah, throughout basically the entire movie, he's just throwing the fucking hammer down on that bottle.
Seriously,
it's on his table in every fucking scene that he's drinking.
I want to say he throws back a minimum of 4 bottles throughout the movie,
something like that.
And the only time he's not drinking this is when he takes Bailey and puts him in the fucking tool shed, and there's Smirnoff vodka that he takes a sip of.
Yeah,
that's the only time in the movie. That he's not drinking his
and the only reason why is because it's right there. He left his bottle on his desk.
Exactly.
Yep. He had a can of beer open on a table at some point. But
I think he took one swig, and that was about it.
This tells you where our motivations are, where we know what beers are where in a movie, what See, beers are funny. Liquor drinks.
It's so prevalent, though, in
comes,
a movie.
Especially when it comes to Kurt Russell, which, in the namesake of my fucking wife, who I love, the fucking beefcake of all beefcakes, you realize when that man is having a drink and you know when to talk to him.
Yeah,
sorry. Just let you know, your mom is on point. She said CNN is way too scary. Kudos. Because it is. Yeah. Well done. Well done.
Real life is way too scary right
now. Truth. That's why we live in this world.
Yes. That's why we're talking about John Carpenter.
That's why we're doing this, because in 6 months when all mankind has been decimated and aliens come down.
Not
finally.
Even 6 months. The election is in like about a month.
Yeah, no, but it's like 3 weeks, dude.
Yeah.
Three weeks.
No, but it's November 28th.
But
right?
The inauguration is in January, and then it's got to take at least a few months to end the world.
Well, it's got to take a couple extra months to translate the alien language that whoever they got to read the fucking swearing into.
Yeah.
It's going to be a shit show.
It's going to be a shit show. But yeah, that being said.
The aliens know freaking like Egyptian, so there's somebody
that's true.
That,
that's true.
Know.
All right, so.
All right, so Anthony is drinking the drink of Mr. Kurt Russell.
Correct.
Done.
A lot next. Of the drink of Kurt Russell.
And that was some of me. That was some of me.
Oh, okay. All right.
I was about to say, damn.
Yeah. Next up is Scotty P.
It's like we introduced this one already. Let's go.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be a proper episode if I didn't have something of lowdown in my mouth. So right? Thank you for the spooky.
You're welcome.
Is that what you call it?
This is what I call it.
Is phrasing not a thing anymore? Is
that... No, absolutely not.
It's totally a thing and it's amazing.
It wouldn't be a proper GUI episode without lowdown in my mouth.
There you go.
So
his,
there you
his
go.
His wife is so mad right now that she that is, got out.
She's so pissed.
I was going to say, thank you. Or not so, really.
But I did, it's stretching a bit, but I did find Primal Instinct. It's a pale ale, IPA, and it's not too hoppy, lowdown. Calm your shit. But it is also, it's Nelly's Ford, Virginia, so it is East Coast local.
Yes, it is.
And it, I think it's a wonderful beer, and I think it was appropriate because John Carpenter fucking, between Mike Myers, the shit within the Mouth of Madness, the Primal Instinct of his characters are very, there's no complexity.
Complexity. It. There's no complexity.
It's very simple. It's so simple.
Honestly, if you want to talk about Primal, you brought up earlier Assault on Precinct 13, man.
That too.
When they're fucking, yeah. Like you said, they're locked. They have this much space where they can go before they get, otherwise they're getting shot. Like, how primal does that get? That's survival primal right there.
Exactly.
Not on the Predator side, which you mentioned previously.
But on the prey side.
On the prey,
Exactly. So I thought this was, and it's a good beer. I don't hold it in higher regards than some other stuff, but it's doing the job for the episode.
The beer you brought previously, multiple episodes. You got it at Aldi.
Revolution Ale. Yes.
Revolution Ale.
The Amber Ale. Yes.
That's good.
Yes.
Not so much.
He just called out your fucking beer.
That's racist.
Well, I mean, the bottle was...
Why
the Revolution Ale bottle was brown. Those cans are white, so maybe a little bit.
Hmm. Why you got to be calling out the Revolution is better than just the standard, brother?
Because Revolution is a shit. I'm just saying.
I don't
about the Revolution.
All right. You guys can fucking like thumb war outside. For like,
fuck you, Hunter.
Shit. After that,
fuck you, Hunter. What do you got?
I'm enjoying Sam Adams Oktoberfest because why not?
Because Sam Adams
it's on sale.
Oktoberfest.
It's fucking awesome.
It's amazing this year. God damn it, yeah, so yeah, good.
There you go.
This year is actually really fucking good. Yeah.
And a little bit of lowdown in my mouth, so.
Yeah.
There you go. Right.
He spread the love around.
That's right.
I did.
Yeah.
I got a lot to spit around.
He's a kind nurturer.
And finally, the last one that got some lowdown in her mouth, Miss Katie.
That's true.
She had to give some back, actually.
I did.
Would that still be called a snowball, then?
That's a snowball.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
You went there. You went
I did.
There.
Now the Hobbit has to explain that to his mom.
Is that as bad as well explaining the power bottom?
Now the question is, do I call Lowdown or Katie Snowball from now on? That's the real...
I think it would be more funny if you call Lowdown Snowball.
I do too. Oh no.
He's got two nicknames at this point.
So
though,
I've got like three, so yeah, fuck it, you know? Yeah. Come on.
Go with it. Just roll with it.
Oh, God damn it. All right, so Katie, what are you drinking on?
I'm drinking Chateau Riesling because I had a stomach ache.
There you go.
It's kind of like ginger ale without, you know, helping at all.
It's fermented ginger.
But it's still a Riesling, so it's a little
nothing
sweeter.
Helps a stomach ache like
yeah, I drink
liquid
dry, so.
Sugar.
There you go.
Wait, there's a Riesling that's dry?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I usually associate Riesling with sweet.
They totally have a dry one in it.
No. Well, you see, the thing is, I don't know why I went kind of Cosby on that.
I know.
But,
why are you messing with, why are you messing with dudes with glasses, bro?
Why do you want to be a black rapist?
Wow!
I'm leaving. I'm out of here.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Left field. Hello.
You said you ate cow queso.
Traditional German Rieslings tend to be on the drier side. It's more the American style Rieslings that get basically
Groots, you care to proto Moscato,
where they're super sweet.
No, he's right on the nose. Like American Rieslings are usually pretty damn sweet.
The Alsace region of Germany makes some really nice, dry, crisp, bright, sweet Rieslings.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, so, Mr. Wine Expert, damn.
So, which one are you drinking? A sweet one?
It's medium.
Medium? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good.
I can't drink that super sweet shit, but they didn't have my super dry, so medium right now.
So, no, Stephen was saying, or Lowdown was saying, we have not talked nearly enough about one of my personal favorite John Carpenter films.
Escape from New York.
It's so good. It's so good. And it has the goddess Adrienne Barbeau in it.
Yes. And the fog as well.
And the ultimate villain, Isaac
fucking Hayes.
The motherfucking Duke. Yeah.
Yes.
Jeez, man. Yes. Y'all don't know number one.
Oh, and not just Isaac Hayes, pre-Scientology's Isaac Hayes.
Truth. Truth.
We all want his car, right? With the chandeliers outside the car.
Oh, fuck yes.
Fucking bad.
Come on, man.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm excited to getting the La Cucaracha horn, but the chandelier car is way more hardcore.
Y'all know I want it.
Yeah.
Well, I wasn't going to be racist this time, but...
And another shout out to Donald Pleasance for that, as playing the president, with my fucking favorite line when he's fucking taking out motherfuckers that he's quoting. And he's like, "You're the Duke, you're the A number one." He's fucking just taking out people with a fucking machine gun. Great fucking scene. Oh, I fucking love it.
And let me side note, John Carpenter, like a lot of directors, writers, love his certain actors and will put them in multiple movies and multiple characters.
I was going to go with that. Yes. We use a lot of actors.
Yes.
Kurt Russell is John Carpenter's man muse.
He's his man.
Oh, absolutely.
Like beefcake.
That is what it is.
Hell yes.
We all know directors have like their favorite actors that they work with on a regular basis. And during the 80s, Kurt Russell was like... Tim Burton and Johnny Depp style.
De Niro to Scorsese. He was just literally every other movie.
Kurt Russell totally took 10 steps up from Disney. From all of his years at Disney and then went with John Carpenter, you know that motherfucker was on drugs. God damn, he had to be on drugs for doing John Carpenter shit.
To have that mullet Big Trouble in Little China, you're goddamn right.
Yeah, dude, don't fuck with
me. He was playing a trucker. It was in character.
Dude, it was not only the mullet, it was the tank top. The boots.
It was the tank top.
The hat.
The boots. The
Harley hat.
And this fucking truck, dude, hauling ass with fucking the
Pork Chop
Express.
Fucking Express.
Come on.
Fuck yes. Come on.
God damn
really?
It.
Really?
Yeah.
Jack, have you paid your dues?
That's right.
The check is in the fucking mail. All right?
Boom. But what I love about... Escape from New York is the fact that thanks for reminding me that's exactly an example of what I love about Carpenter is that he takes modern day problems and with government, with authority figures, everything. You see that in They Live, you see that in a number of his other films, and he puts it in an environment where he's able to comment on it without being that's really why sci-fi exists.
Absolutely.
For the most part, and Carpenter runs with it. I mean, you see the fact that like the government are shitbags. They're giant shitbags. And are not to be trusted, and it takes one man.
don't start with the one man again.
One man.
Yeah.
No?
Dude, really? Really? You haven't done that what was it, the 80s action flick episode that you did that?
In a world.
fuck.
Where everything's gone downhill.
That wasn't a burp, that was a queef.
Don't you have a second dinner to go eat, you fuck?
It takes one man to make a difference.
Anyways, what he
this
is
summer,
saying is...
This summer.
It doesn't matter what John
Join
Robert
Kurt Russell.
In. Shut your fucking mouth.
Directed by John Carpenter in... Escape from Your Mom's Vagina.
Your mom has left the building.
That's the third in the trilogy. It's in pre-production.
That should never happen.
No.
Okay. No. But But to feed off the actual legitimate point you had, it doesn't matter if it's future apocalyptic or current day, like what happened during They Live, Escape from New York. John Carpenter is political as hell. You just got to know how to see the sign. Yeah, yeah, and he always has been, but he's one of those great directors. Again, Jody's here, so I'll
say Romero. Kevin
Smith. Or Romero. Oh. Romero,
don't
but the, but the Kevin
this.
Smith.
He has his own episode.
No. But they are very smart in, for the masses, almost, I don't want to say dumbing down, but bringing it to a simple storyline of how government works, how people work, and what the fuck is going to happen to you as either an average person or what the hell you're going to do to fix your situation. Escape from New York, Big Trouble in Little China, all that shit, it all reflects the same stuff, and the big brother is looking at you and how you're going to fix it.
You are A, on the ball with that, and the one that I think he started off with, hit the ground running with as far as voicing that, was actually going back, Assault on Precinct 13.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah. He started, hit the ground running back in the day with that shit before that.
Because even the cops in that movie who were supposed to be the good guys
were fucking corrupt as shit.
They were corrupt as shit, and then you even had the guy who ended, the couple of people who had to be the heroes still had to go outside of the rules.
The law
or whatever it was to fix the problem. They couldn't do what was required of them. They had to go above and beyond, you know, which sounds like a Steven Seagal fucking movie, but still, you know.
Above the law. But yeah.
No, I mean, you guys pretty much covered what I was about to say.
Well, okay.
God damn it.
Well, what I would say is that ultimately, John Carpenter, with multiple movies that he has, the main character, at the very least, if it's not an overall statement on not trusting authority, at least the main character normally does not trust authority, is a rebel, is somebody that questions anything that's brought to them. And that's why it connects with me so much, personally. Because I'm that person that I don't immediately accept what's being given to me. I always question authority. And that's why John Carpenter is punk rock as fuck as far as filmmaking goes.
Amen.
Right. And that's what's awesome about the end of Escape from New York, where Snake just kind of fucks the man at the very end when when the president's like, let me play this important tape. And it's not what he's expecting. And like pretty much Snake Plissken is like, fuck everything. Fuck everything.
Can I even throw in at like... Even though it was the shitty sequel of Escape from LA.
Oh, let's not get there yet.
But the end of that. But the end of that, where he fucks him over.
Same mentality, where he's just like.
It's the same mentality of just like, hey, I'm going to do this, but no, guess what? We're going to do this.
Snake Plissken doesn't give a fuck.
I don't have enough beer to talk about Escape from L.A.
We're talking about a concept, not the movie.
But the concept eventually. Of what he does and how Snake Plissken handles business.
Which, by the way, I have my share beer. If anybody's out of their cup, like I can get that going. So continue.
Sorry. All right. I want to mention one more movie that he did with Kurt Russell. Which is the Elvis biopic.
Yes, the Elvis.
Yeah.
Which was fucking, it was a TV movie, and it was actually really well done.
Hell yeah.
It was a little slow at parts, like the early years where it's like the really bad kid actor doing the things. But
once you got to Russell.
But that, whatever.
That kind of pulled him out from being the kid
right,
actor.
Right, exactly. And he killed
He got to reprise that role.
He
at some
killed
point,
it.
Didn't he?
Well, I mean, he did. He did that other Elvis movie with Kevin Costner,
3,000 Miles of Graceland.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is honestly, I love that movie.
I love that movie too. It's so good.
It is kind of a guilty pleasure. Yeah, but no, I mean the Elvis spook. Flick, the biopic TV movie. I don't have any problems with it.
No, and it's that, and just to take a. I'm going to throw in a little bit here. To throw in, John Carpenter has done some of the most, like he has some of his big name stuff like Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York, and stuff like that. But dude, you look at some of his like more unappreciated movies and different stuff like Prince of Darkness. Look at IMDb, like Memoirs of an Invisible Man, Body Bags, which was a TV movie, even In the Mouth of Madness, which is a fucking superb. Okay,
I want to talk about In the Mouth of Madness.
Dude, that movie is beautiful, but in the mainstream of things, that movie bombed. Well, but
that happened career.
Truth. But John Carpenter is one of those where he has his nuggets of just like, hey, I made this glorious movie, but you don't know about the other 10 fucking movies that I've done. And John Carpenter normally has his name on fucking everything. It's John Carpenter's something. Which, and as far... I always fart, but, you know. But when you get into some of the sequels and some of the 90s stuff, yeah, we'll dispute a little bit on that. But most of his movies, you can't argue with.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing up... You actually named them pretty much in sync with Prince of Darkness and In the Mouth of Madness. I want to bring up the unofficial trilogy of The Thing, Prince of Darkness, and In the Mouth of Madness. Like, it has been... It's all over the internet. You can read about it. There's this whole, like... Almost like cult following that this was like this unofficial trilogy where it's they're all supposed to tie in. And I'll be goddamned if I can figure out how The Thing ends up being In the Mouth of Madness. Like, I kind of get the Prince of Darkness in between with In the Mouth of Madness, but not so much with The Thing.
The only thing I've been able to determine from that is that it's a mentality state of people going fucking nuts.
Okay.
It's really, that's the only thing I've been able to pull from it.
They are paranoid. They're paranoid. Going crazy.
Prince of Darkness, it's obviously very demonic and everything, but they're fucking still, it's still a paranoia thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And something evil is creeping up.
In the Mouth of Madness, psychotic.
Oh, dude, Sam O'Neill is fucking.
The town doesn't actually exist.
Yeah. Exactly.
But, In the Mouth of Madness is like our second half.
But I'm sorry, but Sam O'Neill? Is it O'Neill or Sam Neill?
It's Sam Neill.
Sorry.
That's part.
I've had a few drinks tonight.
I've had some beers.
I've had some spooky in me.
All right, so I'm going to cut you off.
How dare you, Groot?
Indeed. Okay. But Lovecraft, that's a connection.
Oh.
Well, because.
And absolutely.
Yes.
Lovecraft is the connection because there are crazy, insane monsters that warp the imagination and create insanity in people in all those movies.
Well, and the not only thing, that, but it's well established that John Carpenter is a massive Lovecraft fan to the point where in They Live, he didn't write it under the pen name of John Carpenter. He did it as Frank Armitage. That was a reference to a character from Dunwich Horror.
It was Henry Armitage
in Dunwich Horror. But the character of that Keith David played was Frank Armitage. That was the name of the character. He's been a massive Lovecraft fan for the longest time, and you get notes of it even in Ghosts of Mars. You get notes of Lovecraft.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
As shitty as that was.
Yeah, as shitty as it was,
but isn't Armitage like, I believe that last name is used through various like Cthulhu stories.
Yeah, it is.
Lovecraft names. And then, like you said, John Carpenter picked up that name and is like, I want to say it's not even in main characters, but it pops up in random shit of his.
He's in line with Stephen King on just giving proper credence to somebody that has so much.
It's not
always
there in your face, but it's there. You got it. You almost have to know what to look for.
If you read Jerusalem's Lot from Stephen King, that's a straight-up Lovecraft story. Like,
we're not talking like the adapted for TV fucking sounds. We're talking about the short story fucking Jerusalem's Lot.
Right.
It's a straight-up Lovecraft story.
It's badass.
True.
And you can get touches, especially in The Thing. I think The Thing is very much a... I mean, it's a cosmic horror.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Movie. No. The actual like alien presence that it like infects on a biological level.
He has a dancing Cthulhu.
I know
he's
does.
Trying to mess with. All right.
But the alien infects on a biological level, and it like just infects the, you know, the being and like spreads. And it is like, you know, there's tentacles and all the things, and it's fucking crazy. Do it.
To play off that, that goes into, I like the movie. The original one was great. It's one of those few reboots or remakes that was great. Damned. Village of the fucking Damned.
Yeah. I knew he was going with that.
Yeah. Of course, man.
I can't do that remake, dude. I can't do it.
I'm sorry. Christopher Reeve, he's walking. I know that's a stretch for some people these days.
So Christopher Walking, is that what you're saying?
That's what I thought of. Damn it!
You went there. Yeah, that's right. Pat yourself on the back.
You just paralyzed him with that joke.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Okay, I'm proud of you. Yeah, that's good.
With just his arms, he's spinning in the grave. Because he doesn't know how to use his legs.
Oh my God.
Could he use his arms? I thought it was only the head.
No, the head. No.
No, he could use his arms. He wasn't a quadriplegic.
Yes, he was.
Was it?
I thought it was his paraplegic. Yes. He was a
quadriplegic. No,
he was quad. Yeah,
he was quad,
dude.
Jesus.
Did you not see the made-for-TV movie remake of Rear Window?
Jesus.
No, I did not.
Anyway, going back to legitimate
Be sensitive,
shit.
Dude.
Wait, Anthony, why? What? Christopher Reeve isn't, like, on most of his body.
You guys are dicks.
No shit. So anyway, your reason for liking the Village of the Damned remake?
Was that it was good.
That's not a reason.
Again, it touched on politics of modern day.
I like that movie better when it was called Children of the Corn. I'm sorry.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yes. Drive on that. Again, Stephen King, motherfuckers.
Again, I can't argue with Children of the Corn because that was a fucking great movie and a book.
Great fucking story.
Yeah, dude, it was fucking phenomenal. But I think, personally, the reason why John Carpenter touched on Village of the Damned was it's politics that even affect today. Even as no matter how long ago he made it, the politics still affect today.
What's the common issue with politics is that anybody that's in power tends to take too much power.
And who's the most common to do that is Hollywood directors.
Children
and
in small towns.
True. And
that try to kill adults.
There's so many of them.
But you say that, but children are the ones that will always tell you the truth. No matter what the situation
You should
is.
Die because you don't have mind powers?
You're damn right. That's... My son freaks me out. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Actually, it's his daughter. But no. No.
Your kid is Children of the Dome. That's a different different grouping.
So it's like a mix between Under the Dome and Children of
the
Dome.
Yeah. It's like a bunch of people are trapped under his kid's head.
You fuck.
Child of the Thunderdome?
Child of the Thunderdome.
Two men enter, no men leave.
Oh my God.
Only my son rules. Yeah. Who runs Bartertown? My son runs Bartertown.
Bonk's Adventure runs Bartertown.
He is master and blaster.
You fucking man child.
He is master and blaster.
He is master and blaster.
Guess who is body of man, mind of child? Right across from me, right there.
I'll be master. That's fine.
One I was going to throw out was Carpenter's Vampires, which we were talking about a little beforehand, it's probably not one of the best movies, but just not. James Woods fucking going off and killing motherfucking vampires is pretty fucking entertaining.
He's also James Wooding the fuck out of that entire movie.
We were talking about it's like they cut him off of cigarettes and everything he wants and just fucking cuss and freak the fuck out through the entire movie.
Truth.
And can we talk about Daniel Baldwin's performance in that fucking
Fatty
movie?
Baldwin. Fatty Baldwin.
He's the fucking worst. It's so good. I love it.
Dude, when you have, Alec Baldwin is a given, but when you have one of the other Baldwins side by side to James Woods,
it's so stupid,
dude. You can't lose.
That sounds like a Family Guy episode.
It
like,
should have been Steven.
Well, gee, it almost was. Yeah. It says James Woods High School.
Yeah, yeah, basically.
Wasn't there a scene in that movie where he got bit and he shot the gun off and then burnt his fucking bite and then
yes.
yeah. being a vampire?
Yes.
Wasn't that a scene
That's
in the movie?
That's pretty convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Jesus
it's,
Christ.
It's probably my favorite James Woods role of all time.
Well, you did like The Hard Way with Michael J. Fox?
No. No, I'm going to erase that
Dear
from my
God,
memory.
Dear God, why do you bring up shit like that?
Or, Cop?
Or Cop.
Cop.
What about that show where you had Shark? Remember that shit?
Oh, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up right now. God all right, damn all right.
We got, yeah. we got to get back on, yeah, on anyway, toe here.
I was just going to say, I mean, like, yeah, that movie was better than I thought it was going to be. And, I mean, coming yeah. from some of
Carpenter's...
It wasn't
great, though.
It wasn't great. Look, I'm not
it's
saying...
Better
it's
better than The Ward, which
yeah,
was
I'll
last.
Take it over Ghost of Mars yes. or The Ward yeah, or any Ward. Of that stuff. It's
but,
kind of his last kind
but
of hoorah.
But when it comes to... vampire genre, it's not that bad because especially if you look at vampire movies being since Nosferatu back in what the 20s, 30s, to always add a new twist to a vampire movie is good. Whether the movie itself is the best, may not be, but you give it a decent storyline and how, you know, the great twist of the church is actually supporting an aspect of it. Again, it comes down to the politics, man.
Yeah.
The politics.
And agreed. But before we go too far down the rabbit hole with his so-so to bad works, can we please talk about 2005's fucking cigarette burns? Bam.
Yes.
Oh, no
Passes
shit.
Of bars,
Norman Reedus.
Burns. Norman Reedus. Now, hold
fuck
on.
Yes.
We've got
no,
fucking
fuck yes.
Greg Nicotero on special
no,
effects.
No, before we get
yeah.
into...
Greg Nicotero on special effects.
Yes.
Before we get into that, let's talk about the fact that after 2001, Ghosts of Mars... He took a break from directing or doing basically anything. It
for
took
what,
him
like 5 years.
Yeah, for something
like
5 years
that.
Where
it
he didn't
took him
do,
that long to get up to do.
Yeah, because he did Ghost of Mars and the reaction to that and
well,
just
what he put out, not what, the reaction, what he put out.
What he put out, he did not do dick for like 5 years.
Yeah,
and then still to this day, one of my favorite anthology series that I've ever seen Masters in my entire life horror. With a great fucking intro song. Masters God damn, that intro song
it's
was so
like he
fucking
wrote
good.
That intro yeah. song, though, right?
It sounds almost like, right? yeah. But he did both well, season one and two. He had episodes. He had
Cigarette Burns
and
Pro-Life. Yeah.
Pro-Life, yeah.
Yep.
But Cigarette Burns was Ooh. The hands down winner of. Well,
like,
only because Takashi Miike's imprint was not technically included in the first season.
But it was also like. It was kind of.
But
it was
also,
gruesome as
but,
fuck.
But
yeah.
It was gruesome as fuck, but it gave it that exquisite John Carpenter little twist of like,
oh,
what
cigarette
the fuck
burns.
Is
yeah.
going on?
Yeah.
The failed 90s Carpenter. All right, we've already kind of hit on a couple of them.
Escape from LA!
Oh. Did I just say right off the bat that to me, Escape from LA was like a post-apocalyptic Captain Ron? Like, seriously.
Love it. Love it.
The movie was, man.
Let's surf into the new apocalypse.
Hell yeah.
Exactly, man.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit.
Also, if we can't surf, let's hang glide.
It took everything that was badass about Escape from New York and just threw money at it, and it just didn't fucking work.
Whatever.
At all.
Sunny. It's, why is it so sunny in that movie?
The best Escape thing, in my dark. Opinion, the best thing about it is the cameos with having Bruce Campbell and people like that in there. But besides that, it's... pretty fucking awful.
No way.
Why is it so sunny? I know it's LA, but goddamn, it's in a fucking post-apocalyptic.
He builds a hang glider out of like basically brown t-shirts, and then there's an entire scene where there's no wind, and he's able to just like go around. What is it in a stadium that it's happening
yes.
where he's able to just
yeah.
go in and out with like machine guns and like. Just like
and
shit
you,
all
you
over
have
people.
Where in the first one he's fucking taking on this dude in the fucking ring, and the next one he's shooting
basketball hoops.
And I'm
yeah.
like, by the way, that never fucking works when they have guys surrounding the court, and if you don't make the shot, you shoot at them. Wouldn't the guys across from the basketball court get shot also? It fucking bothers
the
shit out of it. Yeah, the crossfire.
The crossfire is
It doesn't
horse
make
shit.
Any fucking sense.
Okay, here is where I'm actually going to shit on you, sir, because you're trying to find logic.
Escape from LA. Sequel.
I'm sorry. I expected Mr. Carpenter to not have that scene. So that's it.
Again, this is an entire movie that negates itself, where the entire concept is that Snake has to go in to take a thing away that prevents an EMP from happening that turns off everything.
You better call him Pliskin.
Oh, Mr. Pliskin. Mr. I'm sorry.
Mr. fucking Pliskin.
Mr. Yeah. Pliskin, if you're nasty.
Remember that gif I showed you?
Yeah.
No. America, yeah. Bitch. America.
And at the end of the movie, he gets it, and he succeeds. And then because the president's shitty to him, he does it anyway. So the movie negates itself. Anything that happened in L.A. with Snake Plissken doesn't matter, because if he didn't show up in the first place, it would have happened anyway.
They caught him, though. Like, they caught
him. Negates the entire fucking movie.
Yeah.
Honestly, let me say that it is a funny part where the president is going batshit crazy and going to pray and do all the shit.
Yeah, and he's hiding under a table.
The whole religious thing, and they were like, go make sure that he... It wasn't that he hurts himself, but go make sure that he prays properly.
Yeah.
That was the whole thing with the military. And growing up in a just very pray. Religious just household, pray. It just, that was ironic as shit and funny as hell.
It just seems like Escape from L.A. is, you know, like Escape from New York with a higher budget. Where,
yeah.
And I'll just throw that out here. Where Raimi had Evil Dead, he got some more money, did Evil Dead 2, and improved on it.
Better.
Did improved on it.
Right.
Escape from L.A. is nothing fucking compared to Escape from New York.
No, it was.
No. And that's what's the kind of difference.
I unfortunately, the way they took Escape from L.A., and thankfully Hobbit's gone because he was trying to shut me down. Fuck him.
Let it out.
Let it all out. Escape from L.A. was, honestly, to me, was the Hollywood thumb on Carpenter. For a lot of stuff. Can you feel it, Groots? Can you feel
it's
it?
It's like fog.
Yeah. But Escape from L.A. was the Hollywood thumb on Carpenter for that one, where they were just like, we like your idea, but we want to throw in our ideas, and you're going to listen to us because we just threw you $1 million to do it.
By the way, like, the soundtrack on that movie is basically like the giant stain.
Soundtracks set aside are fucking phenomenal for John Carpenter. Movies.
No shit.
And then you got like the weird Limp Bizkit soundtrack from fucking Escape from New York or whatever the fuck it was.
I mean, everybody talks about the whole surfing scene. Does anybody like take into the fact that he was surfing with Peter fucking Fonda?
Dude, that was the best part of the movie. Peter Fonda was in that shit.
He was like a surfer,
but
dude.
It's still Escape from L.A.
Well, dude, that movie's so good. I don't care what anybody says. And you say it's sunny. Although, it's just the stupid like stage lights.
That movie is not so good.
It's so good.
All right.
Pretty ham-handed.
I'm going to say this. Escape from L.A. was a guilty pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay?
Ew.
It really was. Fuck no, it really was.
Kurt Russell.
I will say I do appreciate Steve Buscemi in there.
Yeah.
So. Yes, no, that too. Yes.
The movie did not add up to Escape from New York at all, ever. But it was just a bunch of fun. It did not compare, but it was a bunch of fun. So enjoy it.
I think just expectations. You were like, okay, Carpenter's getting a little more money. And he just, it wasn't the movie everybody was expecting.
The actors held up to what they were supposed to do. The overall storyline was shit. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
The storyline was simple enough. I mean, it wasn't that
but
much different.
But it's not
different.
About it as simple enough as how it was executed. Shitty.
We're talking about the writing, the editing, and the
from
pacing.
From Hollywood. Yeah, it sucks.
Okay, it was discussed off
and
mic.
And the direction.
It was discussed off mic that I think it might be important to this podcast and our listeners to do an audio commentary of Escape from L.A.
Yes.
In the near future.
Shit.
I think...
I'm down.
Done.
Because I don't care where you live in the world, you can find a copy of Escape from L.A. on Amazon through our link on GUIPodcast.com.
There you
for
go.
For probably like $2. Like, it's not going to be hard to find.
Or YouTube. It's probably free.
It's probably free.
It's probably free somewhere.
It's probably free on Amazon.
Definitely.
You order whatever chapstick lotion that you're getting, and it'll be
after the first of the year, we've got to do a Wicker Man, and we've the Nick Cage Wicker Man, and we've got to do a Escape from L.A.
Yes.
Yeah.
But before we conclude, because we're...
Groot shakes his head every time Wicker Man comes up.
Yeah.
No. I'm down for like the freaking Escape from L.A.
But he wants the Christopher Lee.
But the Wicker Man was such a shit fest.
No, Christopher Lee Wicker Man, we'd just sit there and be like, oh. And then it would just be quiet.
Yeah, that's not a riff track.
That would be a great movie, but to do an audio commentary.
I understand. On the Nick Cage understand. You can't riff track that one or, you know, make fun of that one, but that Nick Cage one is so fucking bad.
All right, we're about done, good. But let's very quickly go into the remakes of John Carpenter flicks.
The Fog bullshit.
That was called the horrendous bullshit version.
Pre-2008, super bad CGI where it relied entirely on CGI and not a combination of CGI and practical effects.
Thank you.
Probably the only person I defend it is not here, which would be Smash because it has Mr. Smallville in it. But
I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, but that's bad. Probably the only person
you can
defend
you
that
can
movie.
Have and Tom Wells or whatever the fuck his name is because I like Smallville. You can have a great actor in a movie, and the movie is still shit.
And that movie was dog shit.
It was fucking dog shit.
Another one is, as much as I love the man and the music and everything like that, but the Halloween remake, for me, dude. I went out and talked for like an hour outside of the theater after the first Halloween. I never bothered with the second Halloween.
Me neither.
It was
you're luckier than I am. I will say that much.
I gotta agree with Hobbit there. Like I didn't see Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. I kind of trusted Rob Zombie and bought it. I spent money that I was very, very angry about. But my thing with Rob Zombie's remake was the first half, fuck off. The second half.
Fuck off.
Was bad, but it wasn't as intolerable as the backstory bullshit that he put into a character that doesn't need a fucking backstory.
Yeah, instead of a character that just kills to kill and there's no backstory, which makes it creepier.
I'm a whiny little brat. I don't need
we're going to use every single serial killer trope that's ever happened on the face of the earth.
And I need to see my mommy with a white horse.
That was Halloween 2, guys.
That was worse than the fucking first one. Holy shit!
Yeah,
it's just like bullshit. Rob Zombie took what we held sacred and just kind of shit all over it. And we tried to watch it because it is Halloween and it's Rob Zombie. We're like, oh well, you take this and this, you put it together, it's gotta be good.
2 + 2 = 4, right? No,
it doesn't fucking work.
I respect Rob Zombie and I love what he does musically and occasionally. Okay, once in film.
House of a Thousand Corpses.
Took a diet giant, like, whiskey shit and then put his wife in the middle of that and went, ta-da! And that was Halloween 1.
All right. Besides giving the whole, like, I want to give a backstory to Michael Myers, that Rob Zombie's Halloween wasn't bad.
Yeah, the backstory part was the worst.
The backstory was the worst part because we want the mystery. We want the, like, where the fuck did he come from?
Exactly.
All right, so he's a killer. Halloween 2, I'm seeing my mother with a white horse. I'm seeing visions.
Okay.
And I must kill. I mean, that's all the fucking movie was.
You just made a bad decision watching it.
I did
enjoy Malcolm McDowell as Loomis.
We got a lot more remakes to cover besides just Halloween. We got Halloween. The Fog was covered. What else? Assault on Precinct 13.
That was a pile of shit.
That was a giant pile of shit.
Oh, well, yeah. But I want to say that there was a remake of Elvis that was better. And I love his Elvis, but Walk the Line was awesome. Sorry.
That was not Elvis. That was Johnny Cash, though.
Whatever.
It was still better than Elvis.
I was just saying, that was Joaquin Phoenix. And who directed that?
I was gonna say bring it up, and it's more of a prequel than a sequel. But we kind of talked about it ahead of time. But the thing,
prequel. No, that wasn't a fucking prequel. They pretended it was a prequel. It's supposed to be the camp that existed at the beginning of the camp thing.
From that they went to look at, and that's what it was. The fucking same movie.
The biggest downfall is obviously the CGI in there.
No, it's the fact that it was the same goddamn movie, and they tried to make money off of fucking John Carpenter. That's what that fucking movie was.
I still think it has its
high
points.
I never watched that movie.
It was the same motherfucking movie. There was nothing different.
No, there was something different.
The CG,
the first one was better. That's what was different. there was nothing new that was brought to the table. You didn't get any more.
At all.
If they brought insight into the creature, if they brought insight into what happened before it went into the thing,
nope.
That would have been great.
Nope.
There was nothing delivered in that movie.
That fucking movie said the same exact shit that the fucking Bailey said in the goddamn original thing, where like it infects its host and tries to mimic it, and then that's what it does. That's all it did in the fucking the prequel. It was I used to bounce.
Uh-oh. Are you mad? Are you mad right now?
Oh man, he's hot. He's hot.
I got home from the bar, and I'm like, okay, well I'm not tired, and the thing was free on like HBO On Demand or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'll fucking watch it. Holy shit. I don't think I slept that night. I was so mad after watching that pile of shit. I'm like, it's the same fucking movie. They did nothing different. Why did they make this movie? God damn it.
I'll still say it's in my opinion, it holds up better than some of the other, like The Fog and stuff like that. Like, I'm not saying it's...
No, The Fog...
You're saying The Fog remake is better than...
I actually agree with Hunter here.
The Fog original is better than...
No. But I'm talking about of the remakes. Of the remakes. Stuff that's taken Carpenter's properties and redone it. I have to say, the thing holds up better than some of the other stuff they've done.
Of the remakes.
I'll throw this out there. I'll take the Thing prequel over Escape from L.A. Straight up.
Oh, okay.
Straight up.
Yes.
There you go.
I'll agree, but Escape from L.A., well, it depends on how you take it, because if it's like...
If it's a shit fest thing.
If we're sitting around drinking beer and doing an audio, like, commentary on it, I'll take Escape from L.A. over that dog shit. Because the Thing remake or prequel or whatever, like, what am I going to do with that? I'm just going to be mad the whole time.
Escape from
L.A., at least I can be just like, this is terrible, and, like, laugh and...
You say with the Thing remake, you're just going to be mad all the time. Like, you see me right now, right?
Yeah, I'm
mad.
You've got a vein popping out of your forehead.
This is fucking bullshit.
All right, I love the Thing.
At least Escape from L.A. had Jackie Brown.
That's true. I mean, yeah. All right, we're about done on this episode of Geeks on the Influence. We're going to continue to talk about how much we hate the Thing prequel and also the merits of Escape from L.A. On the porch after. But thank you guys so much for listening. By the way, I will tell you the episode following this is going to be our VHS Massacre episode that's going to have interviews with Tom Seymour, the co-director of VHS Massacre.
And
interviews with the director and star of Hectic Knife, another trauma film. And also an interview with one Lloyd Kaufman. On that episode as well. So definitely stay tuned for that. It's also going to be our first live episode. The interviews are going to be separate. We're going to record them ahead of time, and we're going to attach that to the audio. But definitely stay tuned for the live part as well, because we're going to be talking about independent media, independent film, and the death of physical media and how it affects independent filmmakers in the process, in a live studio audience. So definitely stay tuned. And you might be one of the people that were in the audience for that episode. So it's worth a shot to listen to. As always, follow us on basically everywhere that you can follow anyone ever. And please rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, all that stuff. The ratings do definitely help. And thank you to the Gajir Experiment for the use of Little Girl on the intro and for the use of Dead by Dawn by the Creepazoids on the outro. And as always, join us or die.
Is McCready.
It would be better obey us or die on this one? Is that,
yes.
Obey us or die, Hobbit.
Obey us or die, Hobbit.
Obey us or die. Yeah. All right. All right. Obey us or die.
Join us or die. Join us or die. Or I will swallow your soul. Necronomicon gives us power to rise from the dead. You let it take, our plague begins to spread. You can fight all you want, cause you don't you resist.